The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
It's a good Thursday. Thanks for being with us. We have Peter King. It's time to do a deep dive on what exactly the national view is of the Arizona Cardinals and the train wreck that is the local franchise in the NFL. We'll get with Peter King. Also, today is 1 week out from the NFL draft. We want Peter's comments on how he thinks the draft is going to shake out. None better than Peter King, Football Morning in America. He's been joining us since we started in 2012, and we always appreciate Peter jumping on board. We're going to turn our attention today on the stream to the National Football Foundation Valley of the Sun Chapter Awards Banquet, Scholar Awards Banquet, this Saturday. It's at 12:45. It's at Wild Horse Pass. Ron Wolfley is going to be honored as a distinguished Arizonan, and Sean Aguano is going to be honored as a distinguished Arizonan. It's a terrific event. You know, the distinguished Arizonans are just a small part of the show. I will be the MC of the event. And you will see 28 high school seniors being honored with scholarships. And they're not the biggest names. They are not the five-star, if you're into that sort of nonsense. But they're players that have done it in the classroom as well as on the field. And it's one of my favorite events of the year. And because Ron Wolfley is going in, I wanted to have Dave Pasch on, the voice of the Cardinals and NBA basketball and all that. Dave, nice enough to give me some time. And Rick Gerritsen on Sean Aguano. Of course, Rick, the head coach at Chandler High School, where Sean was before at Arizona State. So we'll have Peter King, Dave Pasch, Rick Gerritsen on the stream show. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. As always, Desert Financial Credit Union, we do appreciate their ongoing support. It is game number three tonight. A little housekeeping here. If you have not followed Eliav Gabay from our team, he is on social, on Twitter, Eliav Gabay, G-A-B-A-Y. He is in Los Angeles with the Suns and the Clippers. He will be there throughout the weekend, so give Eliav a follow on your social media channels. Again, a little plug there. He does great work for us. In terms of what's going to happen tonight, you know, the Suns hit their mid-range shots in game two. They didn't in game one. They weren't as, weren't as even late in the game as I would like them to be. It wasn't like every possession. That's playoff basketball. That is playoff basketball. And I have to feel fortunate that they're at 1-1 the way that they started out game two. Game two is not good. And so here we are. Game number three is tonight in LA, and we're looking forward to that. I did not see, I just saw the scores and some highlights of Denver winning last night over Minnesota. I care more about that than Memphis and the Lakers, quite frankly, because if the Suns win, they'll meet the winner of Denver, Minnesota, the next round. And I think it's going to be Denver. Jamal Murray, they arrested him in Denver. This goes back to why the regular season is worthless and why it is pro sports has got to figure out how do we need to take the model of soccer? We need to take the model of soccer in the NBA, and as the season progresses, players are just going to leave to go play in friendlies like we had last night in soccer over in Glendale with Mexico and El Trey. Is that what needs to happen? Is it like in the Premier League? Do you take that model, if you're Adam Silver, and say, you know, we're just going to have some guys go play things that are more meaningful, more important? Adam Silver's talking about a regular season tournament next year. The old guard's going to hate this stuff, but I've seen it. It's a ripoff to you, most importantly, to go see regular season NBA basketball where guys are being rested just so they are ready here for postseason. And so how do you make it more meaningful and get your brand and your name out there? And I think Jamal Murray is one of those examples. Denver's, he can't play tonight. Well, he could have played, just don't want to play him. And the poor fan that saved up all of his money, he's got his Nuggets jersey on, or he wants to see Suns Denver and it's late in the year. Not a chance. So it's my little rant about the regular season. Why I've said all along here for the last, I don't know, 3-4 years, you can just see this shift coming of why go to a game in October, November, December? I got my team. Yeah, they're not playing tonight, just so you're really clear. So there's that little, I get off my soapbox. Madison Bumgarner, what are we going to do here in Arizona with Madison Bumgarner? Yesterday, again, he was awful. I sat here in my office. I got about an hour and a half of my life. I'll never get back because I wanted to see, spent about an hour and a half of it watching him scuffle through seven runs, seven hits, four walks, You could hear it in Luis Gonzalez's voice doing the game yesterday on television. There's got to be some conversation behind the scenes like, yeah, where can we get him to go? Texas is the most likely landing spot to me. Go reunite him with Bruce Bochy. The thing about Madison Bumgarner, he's not a bad guy, in my opinion. I don't deal with him every day, but I don't hear that he's a real prick. I don't hear any of that stuff. And he just goes out and he does his business. But he's not getting his business done. And this is a team that they're not a World Series team, right? But they're playing some of these young players that are coming into their own, and they have some established guys, Zach Gallen, Merrill Kelly on the top of the rotation. You feel pretty good about it. Jameson looks pretty good, young guy. Other arms in the organization. So every fifth day, you're going to roll Mad Bum out there. He's going to get just hammered, and your bullpen's going to get taxed. And you're left with, what are we doing here exactly? I don't think people circle the calendar and count 5 days and say, well, I have to go. This isn't Randy or Curt Schilling. Every 5 days, oh, he's pitching there. I'm going to that game. Like, I'm thinking about going this weekend. I am. And do I want to go Sunday if he's going to be in the rotation? No, actually not. I just don't. I think it's going to be batting practice. And there was a moment in yesterday's game, Nolan Gorman from Sandra Day O'Connor High School here in the Valley. Jordan Hamm's done stories on Nolan Gorman. Yesterday, he hits a grand slam against his former, the team he grew up with here in Arizona. So that was fun. And they're in first place. I cannot complain about that. Sitting here on April 20th saying, this isn't a mirage to me, because they have two guys at the top of the rotation that you feel like every time they take the ball, you have a pretty good shot at winning. But you got to do something with Madison Bumgarner. You just have to at this point. Tiger Woods had ankle surgery. No timetable for his return. I'm one of those. There are people now that don't like to watch him on the television set because they think it's painful. It's sad to see a star in his waning years. Golf's one of those sports where you can watch a guy and say, I am going to understand that he's older. And maybe the shots don't travel as far or straight or this or that. Problem is, for him, they still do. It's just the walking part of it. It's the physical part. If he wants to come back and play, play. When Phil was in the Masters a couple weeks ago and he was doing what he did, you cannot tell me that wasn't great theater and great drama. That's what we want in sports. So I'm not going to be the guy that sits there and says, yeah, he can't play, so get him out of there. If he wants to come back and play, play. The Oakland A's are purchasing land near the Las Vegas Strip. This came out late last night. Their lease in Oakland expires after 2024. And it gets me to thinking, I don't know where you are on this. I've been to the Oakland Coliseum. It's a hole. It's a dump. But you know what? Doesn't matter. I grew up in San Diego. Jack Murphy Stadium, it was a hole. It was a dump. Didn't matter. There's something kind of cool about walking into a stadium and saying, wow, this is where Reggie Jackson was at one point in time. No, this is where Catfish Hunter pitched. It's where Sal Bando was over at third base and Burt Campanaris at second. And Joe Rudy comes to the plate. And Ray Fosse is behind the plate. You know, go down the names of the great A's. I'm in San Diego with my dumpy stadium growing up, and I don't cheer for the Padres. Don't care. Don't care. Tony Gwynn, God bless him, good friend. I'd walk into Jack Murphy Stadium as a kid, San Diego Stadium, and it was Dave Winfield doing his thing. It was Dave Friesleben and Randy Jones pitching. Enzo Hernandez was at shortstop. And they brought in a kid named Ozzie Smith. And they had a guy named Gary Templeton. And I go on and on and on. And that stadium's now been demolished. But agree with me on this one. When you walk into a stadium where you grew up, like if you're from Chicago and you walk into Wrigley Field, doesn't it just evoke, whether it's dumpy or not, if you walk into Boston and Fenway Park and you grew up as a Red Sox fan, you don't care. It's your dump. All you care about is Yaz and Fred Lynn, right? No, Bill Lee, Louis Tiant, you know, Carlton Fisk, just go on and on and on, all that stuff. So when I hear that the A's stadium, I get it. It's a hole. It's a dump. But it's for some of you who grew up in the Bay Area, it's your hole, your dump, Candlestick Park. right down the line of all these places where baseball teams used to play. So they're going to go to Vegas. 2024, their lease runs out. I was looking at a map this morning on social media where they're going to put the stadium. So if you've been to Vegas, T-Mobile, where the Vegas Knights play, Pac-12 tournaments held, lots of great concerts, you just go under the freeway, the I-15, and there it is on the other side, like right of like a half mile, mile from where the Raiders play in the Death Star up there at Allegiant Stadium. So cool there. All right, Peter King, what is his view of what is going on here in Arizona with Michael Bidwell, Terry McDonough, Ron Miniger's letter, all of that stuff? Could the, and I get these questions. I don't believe the NFL would ever say you have to sell, but I'm going to ask Peter King because fans are asking me. He may have a different look on it. And what do you do here with the third pick overall in the draft? What does the draft look like? This isn't just going to be Cardinals with Peter. What does the draft look like in the first round a week out? That's next with Peter King. I'm Brad Sismat. Peter King is nice enough to be with us. Football morning in America. There's so much to chop up with Peter. Let's just go right down the laundry list. I'll just, as a prelude, we'll get to the Cardinals and what is going on with Michael Bidwell and all that in a bit, but we are close to the draft. Peter, is this a predictable or unpredictable draft for you as we sit here a week out from draft night?
It's one of the most unpredictable drafts, I think, ever. A general manager, or actually this was an agent. I'll give you a quote from an agent and a quote from a GM. The agent said, all you guys who do mock drafts, people are going to be laughing at you guys after the draft because they're all going to be all over the place. And I agree with him. And Brad, the reason is that nine of the top 11 teams in the NFL in this draft have either first or second year coaches and or GMs. I mean, you look at the Cardinals. The Cardinals are in an absolute power position in this draft at number three. And they have a general manager who's never run a draft before. They have a head coach who's never been in position to pick players and run a draft with somebody before. Tell me how in the world you get a reading on what they're going to do. The Houston Texans, with a very powerful new head coach in DeMeco Ryans, a former coach, he's going to have a lot of say in what they do. And it's why I think it is a fool's errand to suggest that after Bryce Young, that really we know anything about who's taking who, who's trading up for who. I thought Peter Schrager had the best idea for this, and I've been thinking about it for 2 weeks ever since I heard that Houston is not crazy about CJ Stroud at number two. I have thought the smartest thing to do in this draft is to have Indianapolis trade from four to two and trade their high second round pick to move up two spots and basically give the Houston Texans something that they really want, which is an edge rusher they don't have, either Will Anderson or Tyree Wilson. That is a little bit more of the macro than you asked for, but I think it is all going to be mayhem a week from tonight.
Okay, so the Cardinals, though, Peter, they sit here, they already have a quarterback. Yeah, he's hurt right now, but they have a quarterback. So they're in a really different position, and as you said, a position of power. What makes the most sense to you, the people that you speak to, about what the Cardinals will, should, may do at three?
I don't think it. I mean, Brad, I'm dead serious when I say this. They're doing a very good job inside the Cardinals because I truly have no idea what they're going to do. Obviously, they would love to be able to trade this pick. Mm-hmm. But I think one of the things that hurts the Cardinals in the market value for this pick is sort of the diminution of people's or of the impression that people have as the draft grows closer for CJ Stroud. I think that hurts the Cardinals. I think it also hurts the Cardinals that there is a division of opinion. I almost think right now there are more people in the league high in this round who like Tyree Wilson over Will Anderson. I never thought that was going to happen. Hmm. Anderson is basically a perfect character guy, great production in the SEC and all that. But I think people like Tyree Wilson's quick twitch a little bit more than they like Will Anderson. So I think that might hurt them a little bit too, because there isn't a dominant, absolutely must have player other than the two quarterbacks in this draft. The one other thing I think about the Cardinals right now, I remember covering the first Carolina Panthers draft in 1995. And at the time, Kajana Carter, running back from Ohio State, was clearly the number one prospect in this draft. But the Panthers did not want to pick him. The Panthers wanted to pick Kerry Collins, a quarterback from Penn State. So Bill Polian, who was running the franchise, traded from 1 to 5 with Cincinnati. Cincinnati moved up, picked Kajana Carter. Carolina moved from 1 to 5, but only got in return, I think it was the 39th pick overall, but a good second round pick for moving down 4 spots. And I remember asking Bill Polian after the draft, how come you didn't get more when you moved from 1 to 5? And he goes, because there was no market. Nobody really wanted the pick. And so I determined I could get Kerry Collins and pay less for him, you know, financially at 5 than 1. And so I decided to do that, even though I didn't get as much as obviously I would want to. I still got something for him, you know, of value. And that to me might be what Monty Ossenfort could face a week from tonight, which is, okay, he probably really wants to get out of this pick, because Brad, the Cardinals might have the worst roster in football. They might.
Correct.
A lot of people around the league, if you give them sodium pentothal, they'll say they're really among the worst roster, if not the worst roster. And so they need a lot. And so if I'm Monty Ossenfort, I wouldn't really worry about what people would say. Ah, you didn't get enough for that deal. Sometimes you just have to play where the market is. And if he doesn't have a lot of options, he might have to take the best option available to him, which, and again, I'm just going to make this up. Let's say he trades down to pick a 6 or 7. And only gets a second round pick for it. And everybody's going to say, oh, man, you got bad value. He said, well, I didn't have much of a choice. But that's the advice I would have for him. Remember the Carolina Panthers in 95.
And here, Peter, and it's a great story there, I think, for fans to hear. Because in my circles and just here in the Valley, when I hear from fans, what I'm hearing is, okay, trade out, get more assets. You have DeAndre Hopkins sitting over there. He's an asset. You're not going to get a whole lot, it sounds like. I think the one deal out here, and this is transitioning over the Cardinals, is when Buda Baker shows up and doesn't want to be here, and whether it's contract related or not, I think it's contract related, as most of them are, this is about as bad as it's been in Arizona in a long, long time. So I'm going to switch over just to that on the field first, and then we'll get to the Michael Bidwell, Terry McDonough, Ron Miniger stuff. Your view of the Cardinals and from the people you talk to nationally about the team itself. You touched on it briefly about the roster, but what is the national view of what's going on here in Arizona on the field, again, and hire new GM and all that?
You know that it's a borderline disaster. That's all there is to it. But there's nothing that Monty Ossenfort and Jonathan Gannon can do about Terry McDonough and Michael Bidwell. It's not their fight. It doesn't really matter. It's almost like Chris Greer is sitting there in Miami last year and he gets his first round pick taken away from him because of something that he didn't do. So what can Chris Greer do after the first round pick gets taken away from the tampering with Tom Brady? All he can do is come into work the next day and say, okay, I don't have a one next year. What do we do? And it's the exact same thing. Monty Ossenfort can't spend any time worrying about the fact that his owner might get suspended if these allegations are true. If these allegations are true, Michael Bidwill has to get suspended, and deservedly so. But I think the way I look at this is it's almost a rare opportunity, because now you have the ability as a new coach and a new GM to come in and say, all right, well, like Jonathan Gannon, I bet he has said some words to this effect, either internally or verbally. Okay, it's us against the world. Yeah. You know, nobody thinks we can do it. We're at the bottom of the league right now. So what are we going to do about it? We're going to work our rear ends off and we're going to go find players. That's why this draft is so important, and quantity in this draft is so important. Now, the Buda Baker thing, I think everybody knows that DeAndre Hopkins is not long for this world. My guess, just a guess, is that he ends up in New England. But I also think that if I were the Cardinals right now, I would do what I can to repair the relationship with Buda Baker, because he clearly is, maybe he's not a team leader on the level of what Larry Fitzgerald was, but he's a huge team leader. And I think a lot of guys in that locker room would just have slumped shoulders if they come to work on the first day of training camp and Buda Baker is with Team X and not with them.
Yeah, I mean, it's very deflating out here for the fans. I'm focusing on the fans quite a bit on this one. I want to get over to Michael Bidwill. So fans are asking me, sending in notes, would Commissioner Goodell force a situation like in D.C. with here and Michael Bidwill?
He's not going to sell the team. I mean, look, I don't know what he's going to do. The team is in his blood. He's been the owner of this team, and it's been in his family forever. He spoke very glowingly about the history of the Cardinals at the Super Bowl. And I don't expect unless there's something really dire that we don't know right now, I don't expect the NFL to do anything other than discipline him. I mean, Michael Bidwill internally might not be the best boss in the world, but he certainly hasn't done the stuff or approached the stuff that Daniel Snyder is alleged to have done in Washington. So I don't view this as them forcing him to sell the team at all. I just view this that if he actually did what Terry McDonough alleges, which is to give the de facto temporary general manager, Terry McDonough, and current head coach Steve Wilks burner phones to communicate illicitly with the suspended general manager, Steve Keim. If that happened, Michael Bidwill has to be suspended. And the investigation will tell whether it did happen. The evidence seems to be pretty convincing as of right now, but that's why you investigate something rather than knee-jerk it.
Okay, last thing for you. Is there anything out here I haven't brought up to you about the Cardinals that you feel like, you know, Brad, you're missing this point? Fans may want to look at this direction. Anything about the Cardinals that you're seeing?
Well, I think that the one issue that you see is the the attempts on social media, by Kyler Murray and probably by the Cardinals as well, to sort of rehab his image and to make sure that all of the rumors, whispers, public slights that have gone the way of Kyler Murray, that these get addressed and that Kyler Murray understands that he has an issue with leadership and an issue in his locker room, and that he's got to devote time, especially after getting paid $1 jillion. Now it isn't just devoting time because this is the team that drafted you. You signed a contract, a significant extension, the richest contract in the history of this organization. You signed it. Now you got to live by it. And now you have to do what that contract basically requires you to do in an unwritten way. You've got to lead this franchise, and you have to be more of a guy in that locker room who everybody looks to as the North Star of this organization. It's kind of telling that early on we talked about Buda Baker. They can't lose him. You know, he's so important to the psyche of this organization. Almost always you say that about the quarterback. And you don't say that in Arizona. And I think that Kyler Murray has to change that. One last thing I would just say about the whole situation is that I believe that one of the things that smart people do, and Monty Ossenfort's a really smart guy, is he does, he realizes, he looks around his team and he says, okay, here's where we need to start applying the Band-Aids. Here's what we need first. And so that's why almost regardless of who they pick, if they trade down to number seven and pick Peter Skoronski, a guard, maybe a tackle, but probably a guard. My whole point is pick the guy in this draft or the two guys in this draft, regardless of position. The Arizona Cardinals have to look at their team right now as an absolute rebuild. And so don't worry about what the public says. Geez, why are we picking a guard? Why are we picking this corner? Why are we picking? You need 100 things. Just make sure that what you start with is as sure a thing as there is out there.
As always, appreciate your time and your insight, Peter. Thanks.
Okay, Brad, take care.
Football Morning in America. You can find all Peter's content, NBC Sports, and we're back with more after this timeout. Dave Pasch with us for a couple of minutes, and I wanted to have Dave on because I'm going to throw him a softball. I know he's going to hit it out of the park. I'm going to just lob it up there, pal. Ron Wolfley, take it away.
Boy, how long do you have? you know, I've known Ron. It's weird that I don't think I actually ever call him Ron, but I've known Wolf since I moved here in 2002, because when I got the Cardinals job, they weren't sure who they were going to pair me with. So they had me rehearse a taped game broadcast with 10 different analysts.
Wow.
Prospective analysts. They ended up sticking with John Missler, who had been the analyst for the last decade or so with Tom Dillon. But Wolf was one of the analysts that I did the mock game with, and for obvious reasons, he stood out just because of his personality. And obviously, he was so friendly. And I think about, you know, that experience. And I knew at the time, man, this guy's really talented and really fun and funny. He made me laugh. He entertained me. And, you know, eventually they decided when they switched radio stations a few years after that to pair Wolf and I together. And it's crazy to think that we've been together now for almost 20 years. I mean, that's basically 40% of my life. And he's one of my best friends. We have a lot of conversations regarding things that have nothing to do with the Cardinals or the NFL. You know, I just think about his, you know, who he is as a person, his consistency, his integrity, and his willingness to just be kind to everybody that he comes in contact with. In terms of his broadcast style, obviously very unique. But I think the one thing, as entertaining as Wolf is, that maybe people don't, I shouldn't say they don't appreciate enough. I think it's something that maybe doesn't get talked about enough, is how smart he is and how well he knows the game. Obviously, he has the one-liners, the nicknames, but his knowledge of the NFL, his knowledge of football, X's and O's, understanding positions, understanding coverages, blocking schemes, those things are obviously very important. And you have to describe all that, still be entertaining, and do it in a very short amount of time, especially with radio, where the play-by-play guy does the most talking. So I've always marveled at how he can do both, be funny and have this big personality, but also be able to teach the game. And then just, you know, we've experienced a lot of highs on the broadcast, you know, particularly the Super Bowl, the NFC Championship game in 2015. But as you know, Brad, we've also experienced a lot of lows. And when things aren't going well, at least I know I'm going to work with somebody that I love and respect and have a great time with.
Distinguished Arizonan Ron Wolfley. Do you ever think the day would come, Dave?
It's a well-deserved honor. He has been here now for, long. I guess, more than half of his life. Yep. And from his playing days to either the team broadcasts or the radio show, you know, he obviously means a great deal to Arizona. And I know Arizona means a great deal to him. And the friendships and relationships that he has built here in the community, you know, that's not, he's not trying to glad hand, you know, that's just who he is. Yep. He loves people. He loves to be around people. He loves to meet people and he loves to share his story and hear about others and their stories. And so it's a great honor for Wolf. It's very well deserving. I mean, there's few people I can think of off the top of my head. When you say Arizona sports, when you think about sports, football in particular in this state, you know, Wolf is one of the first names that comes to mind.
Rick Gerritsen with us for a couple of minutes on Sean Aguano as a distinguished Arizonan. When you first heard this, what were your thoughts?
You know, should have happened a little bit longer ago. You know, it's well-deserved and, you know, he has a special place and, you know, in my family and my heart with being associated with him since 2010. And, you know, actually, you know, his connection with my son, Daryl, you know, when Sean was his first year as a head coach, Daryl was his first quarterback for the first 2 years. So there's always been a special place with Sean and his family, you know, with my family and obviously, you know, his abilities to build a program like he did at Chandler High School.
What is it about Sean Aguano, Rick, that when people talk about him that you're feeling like, no, they're missing this point about him? What's the attribute or attributes about him?
Well, he's definitely an individual that makes you feel comfortable around him, whether you're in the coaching perspective of things or whether you're a, you know, a parent, you know, looking for to send their child to, you know, to go play, you know, at ASU. And he just comes across as a guy, he lets his coaches coach. Which not everybody does, especially on the high school level. And, you know, he truly cares about his student athletes and he's a true man's man. And, you know, I'm just happy to be a part of, you know, his life in the football world and outside the football world.
Let's get specific about Chandler. You come there and you and Sean, there's magic that's happening. What was it about him as a head coach at Chandler High School?
Well, you know, the biggest thing is, you know, in the coaching profession is you want to be, you know, do your thing, you know, as a coach. And some head coaches aren't quite like that. You know, some coaches micromanage. He never did that. You know, in the days that we started putting, you know, streaks together and things like that, he was very supportive, you know, on the offensive side of the ball when he let Chris Chick and myself and Chad and Eric and everybody and Colin get over on that side of the ball and kind of do our thing. And, you know, it took off where it took off and landed him where he's landed. And, you know, we were all so proud of him last year when he got that interim spot and how well he did with those boys. And it's just, you know, a privilege to be associated with them, you know, and the type of honor that he's getting is well-deserved. Like I said, you know, well overdue.
When he was at Chandler, did you ever sense when did you sense he's not going to be a high school coach forever? Did you ever have that vibe about being around Sean like that?
Yeah, I mean, he didn't really talk about, you know, that being like, you know, per se, per goal, you know, goals in that respect. I knew that he could do the job and do the task at hand just with the way he handled, you know, college coaches that came in, whether it was a head coach or assistant coaches. The one thing I truly learned from him is he treated everybody the same, whether you were from, you know, Lake Forest in Chicago Division III or whether you from Notre Dame. You know, he definitely had the ability to connect, and it showed in the idea of how his program developed you know, how we went about our business, and particularly in the recruiting world. And then when he got that opportunity with Coach Edwards, it was, I think, a no-brainer. And, you know, it's been a great, great spot for him.
What struck you most about him last year in the interim role, taking over in midseason and doing what he could do, the best that he could do?
Well, I thought it was a great call by him when he became the play caller, you know, and you kind of saw a little bit of change in things in that sense and how he's grown in that aspect of things as well in the coaching profession. And just you could tell his ability to connect with his players. His players enjoyed playing for him, whether that be at Chandler, whether that be at ASU. You know, going back and seeing him, I've been a couple times over to ASU with him and Coach Dillingham this spring, and just seeing the environment and the vibe that's around there, and again how his you know, players love playing for him, in this case the running backs, and having DeCarlos there now with him, a former, you know, Chandler Wolf as well, is exciting and makes it a lot of fun to go, you know, stop by Tempe sometimes and check out our kids, you know, that are playing for both him and Coach Dillingham.
How about the family guy away from football? What do you see?
Well, he's the real deal with all that. I mean, I could tell you, you know, in my time with Sean, you know, my son was playing ball at Utah State and Oregon State, and I was not going to miss any games, you know, if he was going to be playing. And had that talk with Sean. I said, I get it if you need somebody else to take, you know, my role. And he said no, you know, and I went to games and missed probably about three or four, you know, Chandler games in that time. And I don't know too many guys that would do that, you know. So from the family perspective, the Ohana perspective, he's the real deal. And his, you know, the way he goes about his business with his family and his kids and Kristen and everything else, it's just, again, you know, he's a true pleasure to be around. And my family's enjoyed our relationship, you know, with him and his kids and Kristen over the years as well, because it's just not all about football.
Anything else you want to add? I haven't asked you about Sean Aguano.
Well, you know, I just want to congratulate him on getting this distinguished honor. You know, unfortunately, I can't, you know, I can't be there. You know, we all love him, his coaching staff, guys that have played, that coach with him, the kids that have played for him. You know, we all respect him. And, you know, his days, he'll be a head coach someday in big time ball. And when he does that, we're all going to be supportive and follow him as we did last year.